The Vanishing Venusians by Lee Brackett. Part 1. The breeze was steady enough, but it was not in a hurry. It filled the lug sail just hard enough to push the dirty weed-grown hull through the water, and no harder. Matt Harker lay alongside the tiller and counted the trickles of sweat crawling over his nakedness, and stared with sullen, opaque eyes into the indigo night. Anger, leashed and impotent, rose in his throat like bitter vomit. The sea, Rory McLaren's Venusian wife called it the Sea of Morning Opals, lay unstirring, black, streaked with phosphorescence. The sky hung low over it, the thick cloud blanket of Venus that had made the sun a half-remembered legend to the exiles from Earth. Riding lights burned in the blue gloom, strung out in line. 12 ships, 3,800 people, going no place, trapped in the interval between birth and death, and not knowing what to do about it. Matt Harker glanced upward at the sail and then at the stern lantern of the ship ahead. His face, in the dim glow that lights Venus even at night, was a gaunt oblong of shadows and hard bone, seamed and scarred with living, with wanting and not having, with dying and not being dead. He was a lean man, wiry and not tall, with a snake-like surety of motion. Somebody came scrambling quietly aft along the deck, avoiding the sleeping bodies crowded everywhere. Harker said, without emotion, "Hi, Rory." Rory McLaren said, "Hi, Matt." He sat down. He was young, perhaps half Harker's age. There was still hope in his face, but it was growing tired. He sat for a while without speaking, looking at nothing, and then said, "Honest to God, Matt, how much longer can we last?" "What's the matter, kid? Starting to crack?"
"I don't know. Maybe."
"When are we going to stop somewhere?"
"When we find a place to stop."
"Is there a place to stop? Seems like ever since I was born, we've been hunting. There's always something wrong. Hostile natives, or fever, or bad soil. Always something. And we go on again. It's not right. It's not any way to try to live."
"I told you not to go having kids."
"What's that got to do with it?"
"You start worrying. The kid isn't even here yet, and already you're worrying."
"Sure I am." McLaren put his head in his hands suddenly and swore. Harker knew he did that to keep from crying. "I'm worried," McLaren said, "that maybe the same thing'll happen to my wife and kid that happened to yours. We got fever aboard." Harker's eyes were like blown coals for an instant. Then he glanced up at the sail and said, "They'd be better off if it didn't live."
"That's no kind of thing to say."
"It's the truth. Like you ask me, when are we going to stop somewhere? Maybe never. You bellyache about it ever since you were born."
"Well, I've been at it longer than that. Before you were born, I saw our first settlement burned by the cloud people, and my mother and father crucified in their own vineyard. I was there when this trek to the Promised Land began, back on Earth, and I'm still waiting for the promise."
The sinews in Harker's face were drawn like knots of wire. His voice had a terrible quietness.
"Your wife and kid would be better off to die now, while Vicky's still young and has hope, and before the child ever opens its eyes."
Sim, the big black man, relieved Harker before dawn. He started singing softly, something mournful and slow as the breeze and beautiful. Harker cursed him and went up into the bow to sleep, but the song stayed with him. "Oh, I looked over Jordan, and what did I see? Coming for to carry me home." Harker slept. Presently he began to moan and twitch, and then cry out. People around him woke up. They watched with interest. Harker was a lone wolf awake, ill-tempered and violent. When, at long intervals, he would have one of his spells, no one was anxious to help him out.